The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we're bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. It seems like, I don't know, as I remember the many years since Real Life Real Estate Investing started, I kind of look back on it and I see eras, you know. I see the era where we were talking a lot about how to get cash so that you could buy any of the 20,000 half price houses that were available in the market and 2008 and 9 and 10, and almost all we talked about in the way of acquisition was bank-owned properties, short sales, subject tos. We didn't talk a whole bunch about marketing because you really didn't need to do that too much anymore. And then as the market kind of climbed out of that, we talked more about, you know, retailing and so, you know, some of the things that weren't working really, really well during the Great Recession. And been times when we've talked a lot about new tax laws and laws and whatnot. And it seems like over the last few years, we have been talking a lot about alternative property types, alternative exit strategies, alternative asset classes. And that, of course, has been because as the number of single family homes has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk, and apartments have, you know, gotten their prices crammed down to a three cap, although that's changing very quickly now. I've been interested in, I think a lot of people have been interested in, okay, so if I'm going to have to fight 9,000 investors for every single family home that goes on the market, maybe what else is there? And that today is one of those shows, and it's not a huge step from single family homes. It's condos, you know, so still residences that are occupied by one family. But it's one that we have not talked about in a really long time. And to help us understand sort of the market and the pros and the cons with condos, I have with me Linda Baumgartner, who I am consistently going to end up calling Linda Baumgartner. Excuse me, Linda, that's just for some reason in my head, there's an ER on the end of your name. I know there's not. I'm just asking for forgiveness ahead of time. If I say that, who has been investing in condos since way before any of this, single family shortage thing came about. And, she is joining us from her home in Georgia. Linda, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Well, thank you, Vina, and you're not the first person to add an extra syllable to my last name, I can assure you, but my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it feels like you lost that last syllable somewhere, just like Baumgartner, just, I don't know, it rolls off the tongue, my tongue better. But yeah, thanks for being here today. And I had a weird childhood. My dad was a real estate investor, and he really, really, really wanted me to be a real estate investor. So I had some conversations in like my grade school and junior high school years that I think most people did not have with their parents. Yeah. And one of those conversations was that I should never invest in condos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, people don't want them and, they don't appreciate like single family homes do. And, the HOA fee kills the whole thing. And also the HOA fee is completely out of your control. For all you know, it could go from $200 to $1,000 overnight. And then you'll be sorry. Like, I actually got lectured on not buying condos when I was a kid, which I will say I have gotten away from and have actually, I actually own a few and have flipped a few. So as I got a little, older and got around like more humans who had opinions about real estate than just my dad, I discovered that that's kind of a pervasive thought that somehow condos are just like not good, not worth looking at. And I'm wondering what in the world it was that possessed you to say, yeah, forget all of that. I'm just going to buy condos.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. When I first got started in this real estate gig, I had no construction skills. I just knew somehow that I wanted to be in real estate. And I went to a seminar, and I learned everything I should look for. I started looking at real estate, and all of it in Connecticut was over 100 years old, which meant a lot of renovations. Mm. And I didn't know which end was up. And this realtor started bringing me to condos, and I'd never heard of them. And found out that it was so much easier. Our very first project was one that it just needed some carpet and some paint and maybe clean up the kitchen, and then we turned around and rented it and made profit from day one. And that was my start. Mm. And then as I started coaching other people, I found that a lot of them, that was their first project too, because condos are just an easier price point, a lot less construction, a lot easier to comp, the whole thing that I just found over and over again. And that's when you and I started talking and say, oh, maybe we should talk about this.
Yeah. So the part about they're going to in an older city, because Cincinnati is the same way, you know, mm-hmm. the city of Cincinnati, except for some, you know, infill new construction, there's whole neighborhoods where every house was built before 1920. And then there's areas that it's like 1950s, 1960s. It had not occurred to me until you just said it that almost every condo you see is going to be newer than almost every single family home you see in the city of Cincinnati. And, you know, me not really liking rehab very much. You're not going to have to convince me to buy condos because I already am, but that is certainly another point in their favor. We actually need to take a quick break. I want to invite listeners because I have a feeling there's a bunch of them who've heard these same things that I heard, maybe who've looked at a condo and weren't sure what to do next or had some trouble with evaluating it or something like that. Give us a call with your questions about condos, 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can send it via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Linda Baumgarten, who has made an entire career right up to the point of being an ender. And like just moving to where she wanted to go and just having her condos and not really doing anything, using the kind of oddball asset class, apparently not where she comes from, but in my world, the kind of oddball asset class of condos. And by the way, I mean, guys, we've got 42 minutes on the show by the time you take in breaks and so on. And if this is something that you've been like seriously thinking about, you need to go to CincinnatiRIA.com because Linda's actually teaching a half-day class online for Cincinnati RIA, and that's Saturday. So, I mean, check your – I know we've got listeners from all over the country. Check your local group first to see if it is offering the class, but if not, CincinnatiRIA.com will get you into that. Now, Linda, the reason I brought that up is because I noticed that the title of the class is – how and why to invest in condos and co-ops.
Yes.
Can you explain what a co-op is and how it's different than a condo?
Yeah, so this is interesting and also something I really didn't know much about until I started researching this. Actually, co-ops apparently became popular in the 40s and 50s as the original affordable housing in bigger cities, I think in Ohio, actually, and also in New York. And a co-op means that there's a corporation that owns the entire building, and each unit is each owner is really an owner and a tenant at the same time. You're an owner of shares in the building, and you're a tenant of the corporation. So two things going on. And how that usually co-ops are less expensive and they have lower value than a condo, and they are more restrictive. The co-op can tell you, first of all, you have to apply to be accepted, and you can make $1 million a year and still not be accepted for various reasons. And then also they can tell you what you can or cannot do inside your unit. Whereas a condo, you're owning a piece of real estate, and you can do anything that you normally do with a piece of real estate, whether you wholesale it or fix it up or rent it out. There are some restrictions that the community might have, but it's really your piece of property, not the land, not the common amenities, but the unit itself is a piece of you own a piece of real estate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, but with a condo you have a deed, and
yes,
with a co-op
exactly.
You have a lease and some piece of paper that says I have shares
yes.
of this corporation. Okay.
Correct,
okay.
Yes.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm just going to call them all condos from here on.
That makes it simple. Yes.
From here on out in the show. So you got into it because you didn't love rehab and because somebody just took you into one and you went, oh, look, this is cheaper and easier to fix and I'm just going to do it. Why did you stay with them?
Well, because the opportunities kept presenting themselves, right? So the biggest fear that people have are that the condo fees are going to go way up and you're going to have these major assessments. And I've not had that experience with any of the units that we've owned. Are they there? Yes, but I've just never had them. So, or if there's one that I just sold and about 6 months afterwards, they did have an assessment. But, I mean, if you looked at the building, the siding really needed to be replaced. And I warned the buyer, this siding needs to be replaced, and sure enough, there was an assessment, but it was a one-time thing, and the rest of the time, the condo fees were so low, it certainly made sense to keep it. Mm-hmm. So I think if you do your due diligence, and that's a big part of why what I teach is, you know, how do you do that due diligence? How can you prevent getting those surprises mm-hmm. and be aware of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I have another one where the tenants that live there, they feel like it's their property. They feel like it's a home ownership. And I'm sorry, I'm getting over a cold. the tenants take much better care of the unit, and they live there a lot longer than an apartment in a small multifamily house.
Mm.
That's my experience. The other thing I like about it is I don't have to worry about shoveling snow and mowing the grass. And those are really big things, that pains in the neck. So that allows me to live not where my properties are. I can be anywhere I want, and somebody else is going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a couple of the many things that I enjoy about condo
mm-hmm.
living.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of just made yourself a cookie cutter, and you kept cutting cookies out of that cookie cutter, and it worked really
exactly.
well. And
exactly.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's one complex that we were in. I think we flipped about 7 units in that. It was a 55 and older complex, and we flipped about 7 units in there. And it did become cookie cutter. We built a name for ourselves. We actually had private lenders that were people living in the community. We found a couple of units that were word of mouth that nobody else knew was available for sale. So that's the other thing I really like, is that once you get into that community or that neighborhood, you can really, like you said, cookie cutter or farming the area until there's no more opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And I'm guessing that one of the reasons you were able to just continue to buy property after property after property and flip them and rent them and so on is everybody else's prejudice against condos. Like, I'm guessing you weren't going up against as many investors on a condo as somebody would have been on a similarly desirable single family.
Correct. There's very little competition. Wholesalers don't know what to do with them. Realtors will sell them, but they're really afraid of them, and they have lots of bad stories to tell. But if I listened to every realtor, I would never have been an investor in the first place. So, yeah, there's very little competition, which is great for me.
Over the years, I bet you've developed some pretty strong preferences about the kind of units you like to buy, because as I look around me, once I actually started recognizing that condos were around and could be really good deals, I started noticing that we've got everything from what I would call really low end complexes. Most of those are old, like 1950s, 60s, 70s constructed apartment buildings that someone then bought and then re-deeded as condos, which when you go in, they've still got like the open staircases with the pebbly stuff on the stairs from when it was first built, and they feel like apartments. You know, they don't in any way feel like, oh, this is a home that was meant for somebody to live in long term. And then we've got like super luxury high rise, literally $1 million condos, and everything in between. So are there particular things that you personally like if you're going to start to get into a community?
Yes. I look for, first of all, I've always made money in what they call the BC neighborhoods, like working class people or the teachers, police officers, you know, the upper middle class. The A complexes are probably always going to achieve top dollar, and they're going to be those three cap properties that you were talking about, and you're really not going to make any money on them. So BC neighborhoods, we like. I look for, is it well maintained? It can be old. I don't mind that, but is it well maintained? Are there structural issues that are going to need to be addressed? That's part of due diligence that could cost a whole lot of money. I also drive around the neighborhood and see what it's like. I talk to the people that are living there. One time I was about to buy a unit that I still have, and I was renting out another unit that I had, and I said, well, would you be interested in living in this neighborhood? And everybody said yes, which was a bit of a surprise because in the past it had had a druggy kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. But so I asked the neighbors, I asked the tenants, would you want to live here? And when I got that positive reinforcement, then I wanted to be in that unit. So I hope that answers the question.
It doesn't sound like you're picky about things like amenities of the complex. You know, does it have a fitness room? Does it have a pool? Does it have a tennis court? Does it have a...
Oh, that's a really good point. So swimming pools cost a lot of money, and the HOA fees monthly that you pay will reflect that. So if I can avoid buying a swimming pool in the community, I definitely do that. I avoid swimming pools as much as possible. Same thing with tennis courts, and some people, tennis courts have been turned into soccer fields because they're used more that way and cheaper to maintain. So I, as an investor, I'm not really into amenities at all. I just want a place where people want to live and can feel comfortable doing that. So that's a good question. Now, I live in a condo complex, and it's actually part of a larger community, which is probably called a PUD, which... It doesn't matter, but
planned unit development.
Exactly, planned unit development, in which this whole community was kind of designed where you'd be born here and die here. So there's an apartment complex, there's townhomes, there's condos, there's patio homes, there's single family homes, and as part of this, there are tennis courts and pickleball courts now, and a lake and swimming pools and all that. But I live here. And amazingly, because it's well-managed, our condo fees are very low compared to what anybody else that I've seen around here. So if I'm going to live there, I'm looking for those amenities. But if I'm looking just as an investor, I don't really care about it. Now, if I'm looking for an Airbnb, a short-term rental situation, then, yeah, maybe I would want some of those amenities, especially like a workout room. And but you do have to check on the regulations for that community. Do they allow short-term rentals? That's a big thing to check out.
Linda, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start dealing with some of these questions that are starting to fill up my inbox. If you have questions about investing in condos, don't assume I'm going to ask it. It's your question. I got my questions. You ask yours. 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. We're talking today about investing in condos, and there's a lot of ground to cover here, ladies and gentlemen, and we're not going to be able to cover it all in 42 minutes, but if you have specific stuff you want to know about, you can give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. I'm going to start in on these inbox questions I have, but I just wanted to remind everybody, tonight is the monthly Summit Investors Help Night Zoom meeting that's free for anybody who wants to come. Tonight is Grill My Deal Night. And no, we're not going to like rake you over the coals. If you have a deal you're working on, whether you know you're in the evaluation stage or you're in the I need to make an offer but I'm not sure how to structure it stage, or you've already made the offer and the seller's come back with some objection, bring it tonight. A bunch of smart people will help you work on it and probably make it better. You can get your link at cincinnatirea.com. Just click on the calendar event for today. You'll have to go through a step or two to get your Zoom link, but you can do that, and it's tonight at 7:30 Eastern Time. As soon as I clicked on a question, three more came in, so now I've lost track. Okay, here we go. This one is from Matt. He says, I've always heard that condos are the first to lose value in a downturn and the last to recover. Would you agree with that? And if yes, how do you account for that in your investment criteria?
Oh, wow. All right. We got an hour or two. As real estate investors, we're always looking for opportunity. So if the market is that volatile, I'm looking to get in and out as quickly as possible. So I'm looking for a really easy flip where I can count on. And condos, you can get them done usually in a month. So you can pretty much count what the value is going to be on the exit strategy. So that's one thing. As far as if you're buying and holding, I find that it doesn't really matter what the sales value of the unit is, because I'm still going to make my cash flow. So as an example, I had a four-family house that was appraised for $55,000. And I understood why, because of the neighborhood. But guess what? It was bringing in $3,400 a month, and I was profiting at least half of that. So did I really care? No. the speed of using condos, I'd much rather be in those in a volatile neighborhood time period than friends of ours who had gotten stuck on a major renovation when the market got stuck. So,
And that point about if you're going to keep it, who cares, is a really good one. I hadn't heard that about condos. What I had always heard was they are just slower to appreciate than single family homes. And I'm not convinced that that's true anymore. You have to remember, Matt, that one of the things that affects the value of a condo is how much the HOA is. So
yeah.
if there's a big increase in the HOA fee over the course of 5 years, because as Linda will be quick to tell you, if it's got bad management and good management takes over, one of the things they find themselves having to do is like make up for past ignoring of important things like I don't know, structure, roof, windows, decks, landscaping, things like that. And they may get, you know, a $25 raise this year and a $50 raise next year. And what they're really doing is catching up to probably what it should have been in the first place. But as that condo fee goes up, that HOA fee goes up, that's gonna make the value of the condo stale, because I think the way people look at buying condos is, what's my total payment?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and then can they afford it, and does it fit within their budget? But they're also looking for stability. The other thing is, the type of people that are buying condos are two ends of the age spectrum. One is my age, being of the retirement, Social Security, you know, Medicare age, God forbid, where I like to travel a lot, and I don't want to have to worry about day-to-day maintenance and things like that. And then the other side are the younger folks, probably 25 to 35 or 40, before they've settled down, have lots of kids. Again, they're moving from job to job. They like the they don't want the burden of a home ownership, and so the condo association takes care of at least half of that. So those are the two groups that we're looking at. And so one of the things that can happen, and it did happen a lot in the 80s, where when things got rough, you know, people got married and they had kids, and then they couldn't sell their condo. Well, it's a little rough for them, but it made a great opportunity for us as buyers, because we could buy them usually with creative owner financing, because they were anxious to sell them and they just didn't want to be responsible for it anymore. So, and I'll say this, the unit I'm in, we bought it, 6 years ago, and it's gone, it's almost doubled in value, and I didn't think it was, because it's, you know, just a tiny little place, but it's almost doubled in value since we bought it.
Very good. Okay, so we've got two financing-related questions here.
Good.
Carla says, I was thinking about buying a condo, but when I called my DSCR lender, they said they don't have any programs for condos. How does one normally finance one? And then a question from Edward that says, do you use hard money?
So DSCR, does that mean she's buying it as an investor for short term? Is that what that kind of loan
is? Debt service coverage ratio loans that are actually, they're just loans that are bought by Wall Street immediately, as opposed to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac.
Yep. So just so I know, because I actually wrote a whole manual on financing with mortgages, because I never knew what all those initials meant, so I started researching them. I haven't had trouble. I mean, sometimes you have to go to boutique lenders, but I think part of it is that if the loan is too small, they don't want to lend on it. The two that I bought here down in Georgia, they put a loan on each one of them, and the interest rate was higher than normal. But I honestly, rather than doing hard money, I usually go to private lenders. It's much more flexible, especially if I have a strong exit strategy. But as far as permanent, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA, they will lend on condos. VA will lend on condos. And in fact, FHA came out with simpler rules back in 2019, because they used to have to approve the entire community before they would give an FHA mortgage. And now you can get your own unit approved without approving the whole community. So it's gotten easier that way. So permanent. And it is a little bit higher than a single-family house, but, again, you just wrap it into what is your monthly payment, and it's compensated by a much lower purchase price.
But it typically wouldn't be a problem to get hard money on a condo if you were flipping it. That's not something you would do if you were holding it long-term, obviously, but if you were flipping it.
Right. I don't know why. I would just keep shopping. There are all kinds of lenders out there, and if you have a track record, they're going to do it. And again, if you can show what your due diligence on it, I think you could convince them. I mean, I also have trouble doing that for mobile home parks too. Like, we don't want to do that, but there are lenders that will. So,
I'll tell you that as I was just thinking through the two condos that I still own, I bought both of those subject to the existing loan.
Yes. Yep. Our favorite way, right?
Right.
Just, It's definitely our favorite way. I bought the one that I still have. He had a VA loan. He'd been paying on it for 10 years, and it had gotten down to like 2.5% interest, and I just took it subject to, and then eventually I paid it off altogether, so it's now owned free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what I mean. Sometimes sellers can't sell them the traditional way for whatever reason, and so it's an opportunity for us to come in with our own money, our own cash, our own creativity, or to ask them to hold a mortgage. But you have to, you know, Vina teaches this all the time. You really, you have to talk English to sellers and have them understand why this is a good idea for them and how this will help them, and use simple language, not legalese, and then take it to, a, you know, an attorney for the contract paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just it's still a deed.
It might be
a deed to a property that connects on both walls and maybe even back wall too to somebody else's property. But it has a deed, and therefore private money, owner financing, subject to even master lease options, things like that, will all work on condos. But I think, Carla, you might want to start knocking on some doors other than the one DSCR lender it looks like you talked to, because I understand that some of them do actually have programs for condos, but why not? I mean, if you're going DSCR, why not go Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac? The rates are lower anyway, typically. So,
exactly. Just do some research and get out there and know it. And, you know, I expect some volatility in the market. I mean, as far as lenders go right now, right? So everybody's trying to figure out the interest rates and are they going up? Are they going to go down some more? And new programs are always coming out because lending is a money-making proposition. So if there's a way for them to make money, they're going to create a program for it. So, And that's why being part of a real estate investor association is so important, like the Cincinnati REIA, because you get to network with other people in your market and find out what they're doing to solve these challenges.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. Question from Mark. He says, is a studio unit a deal breaker due to poor appreciation and lower rent? So I guess he's talking about like what we used to call an efficiency apartment, except this is an apartment. It's a condo.
Yes. Great question. I've never liked studios. I think the two bedrooms are the most flexible. A lot of people will do a one bedroom, but with it, so many more people are working from home or studying from home. So even if they don't have children, they may have a roommate or they may want to work from home. So I tend to buy two bedrooms, maybe three bedrooms. Studios, not so much. But again, you just have to look at the demand there. There's a lot of, you know, say divorced. I mean, used to be the efficiencies, they were all divorcees and they needed a place to put their head at night. So they could be that too. But I think having at least one bedroom is a good idea.
And I can imagine if you were near a big university, a studio might be super attractive to somebody. But back in the days when I owned apartments, the studios were easy to rent, but they were hard to keep people in. Because something in their life would change. They'd get a better job, or they'd get a girlfriend, or something would happen, and suddenly the unit wasn't big enough for them. So I tried to avoid those in apartments, but haven't really run across one in a condo. All right, time for our last break of the show. So if you still have a question that you want to ask about condos, you can probably give us a call if it's like right away at 877-772-9658, or you can send it to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, and my guest is still Linda Baumgarten, who is teaching a half-day class where she's actually going to be able to get into stuff like how does one go about finding out what the HOA fee is and what it includes, and because that's
That's a big one.
You cannot assume that because the HOA fee is higher that it covers more stuff. Sometimes that's true.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's just high. Things like, can you even rent the unit? Because some places have a total restriction. You cannot rent. And some have a restriction that's like, oh, we can only have X number of rental units in the property, and then you would have to find out if they already had that many rental units in the property. So, she's going to be able to, you know, have slides and do a much more like end-to-end presentation. You can find out more about that at CincinnatiRIA.com. Edward is concerned about your screening criteria for prospective tenants. So you've bought it, you've got it fixed however you want to get it fixed. Now you got to put these people in with a lot of owners. I mean, these other people over there are not your tenants. You cannot like get in there and referee if something goes wrong. So what do you look for in a prospective tenant?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, condos are really easy to rent because they really consider it their own home. So you get a very good selection of people. I screen them the way I screen anybody else. They have to make at least three times the rent. They have to, you know, rental history is very helpful. You know, you check out their, and you know, just typical of what you know, you have to follow fair housing laws, but you know, typical of do you have a job and do you make enough money and have you rented in the past and do you pay your rent on time? That kind of thing. But you're also looking for, people aren't going to, I don't know how you really determine this, but you just get to know people. You don't want them to cause trouble for your neighbors. So you don't want people that are moving in and out. You don't want to have them show up and be an Airbnb person unless that's allowed. By the way, some complexes are built specifically for short-term rentals, and they want investors like that. So just be aware of that as an option. And you don't want to have a lot of college kids using that's why I'm not in love with three bedrooms for a condo complex, because you might get a bunch of party animals there, and you don't want that, and you don't want complaints from the association. And associations will come down on you super fast. So it's good to take a little bit of time to screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the two condos I own, I got a letter from the association telling me that if I did not evict my tenant, they were going to. And it turns out they have the right to do that. It's in the homeowners association agreement that they can evict a tenant from the building. And it turned out it was because the president of the association did not get along with my tenant, and the tenant's dog growled at her one day, and this was all going to turn into an eviction on my tenant. So let's talk about the difference between association managed and professionally managed buildings, because that was an association managed building.
Yes. So, by the way, I have a really great tenant in one of my condos. And we had a problem with the person next door, landlord, who did not do any screening. And it was about 4 or 5 months worth of calling the association all the time and telling them. And they finally got that person evicted and I think convinced that guy to sell his unit. But, so this is one thing that took me a while to learn. When you're buying into a smaller community, maybe 10 or 15 or 20 units, it's probably managed by volunteers, committee members, and they may have skills and they may not. They're your friends, your neighbors, and all that. But they may have never managed a budget before. They may not know how to make sure your neighbors are paying their condo fees every month on time. So what I've discovered over the time is that if you buy into a community that has, I would say, at least 50 units, that they can afford to hire basically a property manager on top of them. It's called a community association management company. These folks are professionals about advising HOA boards on budgetary issues and deferred maintenance issues and all the issues that come up. And it really supports the board because your board members are volunteers. They're not doing this full time. So that is now one of the things that I put on my checklist is who's really managing this. And you can tell the difference between one and the other. So that's definitely one thing. And you can, it's easy to check out that overarching community association management to find out what their reputation is to get a good idea about whether this is going to be a good place or not. And by the way, Yelp and Google and all and Facebook are really great ways to check out the, you know, the gossip on the community. Mm-hmm. So you'll always find somebody who wants to complain. So
yeah, social media. That was I determined that was going to be the last one that I bought in a place that wasn't professionally managed because it was literally the president of the association, who, of course, changes every 2 years. You know, it's a volunteer job. It's they leave office every 2 years. Having a personal spat with one of my tenants and flexing her muscles and saying, we're going to get rid of her. So when I found out what was going on, I kind of said, well, you know, I'll see you in court. I don't think this is going to work when she tells her side of the story. And it didn't happen. But I was like, this is what I'm trying to avoid. This is why I don't own apartment buildings. I don't want the drama.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, you don't need that mess at all.
Yes, very true. Okay, so I've got a comment here from John. He said, I heard Linda say earlier that it's not common to get giant assessments on condos. I live in Florida, and we are finding people who are getting $100,000 assessments on properties that are only worth three times that.
Yes. I was waiting for that. The Florida situation is very serious, and it's happening a lot with the high rises, and these are buildings that have been built in the past, and lots of deferred maintenance, and maybe not getting inspections on time, or just passing the buck down the road, and now it's coming to bite everybody, especially with these major back-to-back hurricanes, and with the unfortunately, a couple of buildings totally crashed all the way down to the ground. So, but I don't buy in Florida, so I don't know what to say. You just, I think you've got to, again, do due diligence. And if you find, when you buy a unit, you're going to get the condo docs, and the condo docs include the budget. And in the budget, it will show how much is put aside for reserves, how much they do have for reserves. And they're also supposed to have a study periodically that uncovers deferred maintenance, so then that can get get dealt with. So, there's all that stuff that you can do to help prevent it. On the other end, it's a great opportunity for us as buyers to help somebody out. And by the way, a lot of these folks will get they'll get financed, the assessment. So a friend of mine lives in a very large community, and they apparently never put money aside for the parking, repaving the parking lot. And everybody knows at some point that would have to happen. But, but they did provide financing, so it was a set period of time to do that and get it taken care of. Mm-hmm. So, but on the other hand, as a buyer, you can help the person move on with their lives and then take care of that assessment inside the purchase price of the property. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's all I can say about it.
Yeah. And Linda, we are unfortunately out of time, but I hope you just demonstrated to folks that there really is a lot to think about with a condo investment that you would not ever think about with a single family home or even apartment building where you are going to be in control of the entire structure. So condos, good. But do know what you are doing before you dive on in. And again, if you'd like to take a 4-hour class on that on Saturday, you can go to CincinnatiRIA.com. Linda's going to be giving one of those for Cincinnati RIA, and you can find out all about it at CincinnatiRIA.com. See you guys on tonight's Summit Help Night. Bring some deals that we can all look at and help you with. CincinnatiRIA.com if you don't have a link to that. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.